Hello, I'm Veronica Scaresbrick. Thanks for joining me.
Lithuania, an overwhelmingly Catholic country, the largest and most southerly of the three Baltic republics, recently established its place, as we know, in the Western family of nations by becoming part of the European Union, a move which marked the second historic shift in the nation's history following the collapse of the Soviet Union. And indeed a development which would have been extremely hard to believe in not-so-distant Soviet times. I've chosen to speak of this nation for two reasons. The first, to highlight the key role played by Vatican Radio in Eastern Europe before the fall of the Berlin Wall, and the second, to mark the feast day on Sunday of Saint Casimir, patron saint of Lithuania. So stay tuned as one eminent Lithuanian sheds light on the valuable historical memory of this Baltic nation. He's Cardinal Audrys Bačkis.
Your country of origin, Lithuania, has a checkered history, a painful history. It had a communist regime, a Soviet occupation for over 50 years, I think. It was interspersed with a Nazi occupation. During this period, the Lithuanians clung on to their faith. Is that a correct statement in your view? What are we talking about when we're talking about suffering and persecution of Catholics?
Certainly, after the Soviet occupation, I mean the first one, in 1940, there was a lot of persecution against the church and the intellectuals. There was in June 1940, the deportation to Siberia, about 40,000 people, but they were chosen, the elite, 100 more priests, let's say the mayor of the village, the intellectuals, things like that. So it was a very strong blow to the country. A lot of suffering, but people who have grown in a Catholic surrounding, in the faith, and were able, even in Siberia, even elsewhere, to keep the faith. It's wonderful now today. I saw some religious congregations, some girls who were born in Siberia. So it means that the parents were able, in this condition, where there were no priest, no church, nothing, to keep alive the faith. So then it was a persecution. After there was the Nazi occupation for 4 years, and the most difficult thing at that time, sometimes some people had a sense of guilt, it was the persecution of the Jews. About 200,000 Jews were deported from Lithuania. Of course, it was done by the Nazis, but, well, many Lithuanians defend and took risk in defending some other, as usual, or were passive or collaborate. But then, after the second occupation of 1944, the government wanted to take control of the church, beginning from the head. So it was directed against the bishops. We refused to collaborate, closing down the seminary, not closing down, putting a so-called numerus clausus, a maximum, up to 25 students. There were 400 seminaries before the war. So. The blow against the bishop is very simple. The Archbishop of Vilnius, Rainis, my predecessor, died in the prison of Vladimir already 50 years ago, in 1953. He was arrested in 1948, and 50 died. Another bishop, Borisevich, from Telšiai, in the north of the country, was executed in Vilnius itself. Some others were sent to the jail, so that in 1967 there was only one bishop left in all Lithuania for six dioceses. Some fled abroad, but those who remained in the country were really in very difficult situation. So the seminary was also one of the targets. You cannot enter the seminary if you have made higher studies and things like that. They were trying to keep the lowest level.
And what happened on a daily basis there?
And the daily control of all the life of the church. To make catechesis was forbidden. I mean, if you meet with three young people, it was a crime. And so the priests, little by little, were pushed to a ministry only of sacraments. They only distribute the sacraments, don't get out, don't have contact with the people, avoid all that. And the church survived, I would say, thanks to some very courageous priests, and mostly some very courageous lay people. I think it's the families, mostly the mothers, we were able to transmit what they believe into their children, things like that. So it was a time of great witness of faith up to the martyrs, the persecution. But then our occupation in Lithuania lasted 50 years. It was not the Nazi occupation in France of 5 years. And you can understand in 50 years, with all the discrimination against the churchgoers, let's say, if we are a member of the party, you go to the church for marriage or you baptize your children, you lose your job. So many people were obliged to look for a compromise to survive, for the future of the children mostly.
The priests have to hide their identity?
No, they have not to hide their identity, but they have a permit. And they were the best priests were very active, were moved from one parish to another for every 3 months by the ministry. And they're giving a permit of work, let's say, to the priest. And if you were not acting according to the will of the Ministry for Religious Affairs, or they take away from you this permit, and you cannot work so as a priest. You are obliged to stay in the place where you are assigned. Some of them were sent to make all kind of civil work. The actual bishop of Panevėžys, one of the rural dioceses of the country, waited 13 years to enter the seminary, renewing the youngest. Finally he entered, but he had difficulties afterwards, also obliged to work as a civil clerk for some time. And he was one of the founders of the Committee for the Defense of the Rights of the Christians, not only Catholic. So I would say it was a time where the church was very limited. We have a very heroic witness of some lay people, some priests, and the most important thing to help the people was, I would say, the Vatican Radio was transmitted to Lithuanian and passing the news even about what was happening in the country. Because in Lithuania, like under the communist regime, there was a complete control of the school and a complete control of the mass media. So when there was some violation of human rights, let's say, against children were seen by the teacher going to school and they were scolded and sent away from the school, things like that, there was a chronicle of events of the Lithuanian church was published since 1972. Up to the independence, and was relating these facts. And the Vatican Radio was transmitted it back to the country. Of course, I remember I was working in Rome, we were trying to avoid, to make too personal, not to quote names against the one or the other, but it make a big support.
It wasn't forbidden to listen to Vatican Radio?
Yes, it was forbidden, and they were trying to hiding. But forbidden, you know, at the beginning was very real persecution, but later on in the last years, let's say, of communist regime, 10, 15 years before the freedom, already people were more free to do what they want. One bishop who came here told me, you go in a hospital and at the hour of the Vatican Radio, you hear all the transistors, everybody listening to the Vatican Radio publicly. Many things depend from the local Communist Party, the local Secretary General. If it was a harsh man fighting against the church, it was almost impossible to do anything. Some others were, well, making compromise, knowing the mood of the people. But to give you an example, Christmas was a working day. It was impossible to feast priests. They put all these limits to impede people to celebrate the feast, not only to go to the church, but even to take away this atmosphere of sacred feast, of rest. Well, I mean, the most thing, because all the Catholic instruction was impossible, the religious instruction, not in the school, but also in the church, was very difficult.
So they used a very subtle technique, really. It wasn't a crackdown as such, but it was...
At the beginning, yes. The era of Stalin, it was very strong. But later on, they used more psychological means. Let's say even a boy is entering a seminary. They told him, look, if you want to become a priest, you have to collaborate with us. Not persecuting, but also once a month we shall meet in a cafe, in a restaurant. You will tell me something about this professor, about that man, and things like that. But unfortunately, the young people began used to serve two masters, I would say, in the gospel, to serve the state and to serve the church. if they want to survive, to have a parish, to be able to work. So it was a subtitle, as you say. But at the beginning, the time of Stalin, well, let's remember in 1948, we have over 200,000 people deported to Siberia. It was the time they introduced the kolkhoz, collective farms. So destroyed all the small property. Of course, you know, the peasants did not want the farmers to leave their place. So they were, all family were deported. I know the sister of my mother, my aunt, was deported with her husband and a boy of 18 years old, and they spent 15 years. They survived, thanks to God. They returned back to the country, but it was really persecution at that time. 200,000 people for a population of 3.5 million.
The KGB infiltrated seminaries. Now, was there a sort of parallel church?
In Lithuania, there was never a church of the Pax movement or a church, and people remained really faithful. Many bishops were difficult, like the Bishop of Vilnius. I am from Vilnius, was elected Bishop in 61. Steponavičius, for instance, he was put under forced resident outside of the diocese from 1961 to 1988 because he refused to give instructions. They said you have to prohibit your priest to make catechesis, you have to do that, to ordain these deacons and not the other one. He was fighting, no, in my conscience, this one is not worthy, I will not ordain. So for that he was taken away, and the church remained without bishop for 30 years almost. But they remain faithful. I mean, the argument of that bishop, I told you have to do that. No, I cannot sign a document like that because it's against the will of the Holy See, it's against the will of the Pope, it's against the canon law.
So in other words, from what you're saying, the Catholic Church, in the hierarchy in particular, resisted the parallel church that the communist regime would have liked to have created, like in the other Soviet countries.
Yes, I don't know how they resisted. It was perhaps our tie with the Holy See, and I don't know, was very strong. And, well, it was the only possible thing to do. There was small collaboration. Let's say the rector of the seminary, I remember, was member of the Berliner Conference, which is an organization run by the communists, who tried to show the world that the church is free, things like that. But I know that man, he was an honest man, a good man. He said, if I don't go to participate at this meeting, I will lose a job in the seminary, I will not be able to do something.
So they were walking on a tightrope the whole time, no?
Yes, or doing nothing. That's the worst case. I mean, those were not taking any risk, but it was a minority. But even those one never took position against, let's say, the church interests and things like that. They were afraid to do more in order to have a secure life. You can understand someone was turning back from Siberia, from Vorkut after 10 years, didn't want to have new troubles when he came back, you know.
Well, thanks there to Lithuanian Cardinal Audrys Bačkis for sharing with us these valuable memories.
Well, thanks for listening. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick.